But thank you. This is really very kind of you and an honor to be asked to talk about this issue that I'm thinking about a great deal since my trip. This hearing is particularly timely given the critical juncture at which this partnership between the United States and Pakistan stands. Although we have a checkered history with Pakistan, the recently elected civilian government provides an opportunity to develop a sound and comprehensive bilateral relationship that serves the needs and the principles of both of our countries while also ensuring our national security and theirs over the long term. As you said, I recently returned from a four-day trip to Pakistan where I had the chance, as frankly other senators did who were in the region at the same time, to meet with a broad range of political officials from numerous parties as well as with President Musharraf, Pakistani intelligence officials, the ousted Chief Justice. We actually met with him in his home where he had been held under house arrest.
Did you really?
And representatives of Pakistan's civil society. I traveled to Peshawar, which lies near the border with Afghanistan and the tumultuous northwest frontier province, and to Pakistan-controlled Kashmir.
How long were you there?
A total of about 4.5 days. And then in the Kashmir area, we were able to visit successful U.S.-funded earthquake recovery programs, which I think would make everybody feel very good about the schools and the dairies and the other things that we were able to help restore fairly quickly after a disastrous earthquake in an area that, frankly, has not been known for being a particularly pro-American area. So this is a real opportunity. I chose to visit Pakistan because it is out of that country, and I think obviously the chairman sees this as well, that we face our most serious national security threat. As the intelligence community has confirmed again and again, Pakistan is the central front in the fight against al-Qaeda. Confronting this threat, which includes addressing the al-Qaeda safe haven in the federally administered tribal areas, must be our top national security priority. Now, that means tracking down Osama bin Laden and other al-Qaeda operatives and working with the Pakistan government to neutralize forces before they plot or carry out attacks against Americans. And, yes, as you alluded to in your opening remarks, Mr. Chairman, it means making clear to our Pakistani friends that cutting deals with al-Qaeda or the Taliban is simply unacceptable. But these cannot be our only goals. The fight is more than a manhunt. If we're serious about fighting al-Qaeda and preventing future generations of bin Ladens from emerging, we also must recognize the needs of the local population and expand our development assistance throughout a country where poverty and anti-Western sentiment is pervasive. A key part of this approach will require Pakistan's newly elected government to rein in the military apparatus, which has historically controlled much of Pakistan's politics and policy, sometimes overtly by a military dictator running the country and other times more discreetly from behind a screen of a civilian-led government. And as Pakistan's new government seeks to establish itself, we have to find a way to defend our national security interests while recognizing that the emergence of a democratic civilian government in Pakistan is in our long-term strategic interests. We need the support of the Pakistani people and their democratically elected leaders to successfully counter al-Qaeda and extremism. There is an opening right now for the United States to develop a new relationship with Pakistan. This administration's reliance on a single unpopular leader who came to power through a coup was a serious mistake that was inconsistent with our values and our national security interests. Now we must end that mistake by expanding our relationships and supporting basic democratic institutions. A more inclusive policy will allow our counterterrorism partnership to hopefully withstand the frequent turbulence of Pakistan's domestic policies and help mitigate already high levels of anti-American sentiment. I've never been to a country, Mr. Chairman, where you ask people all over the country who are being very cordial to you, we understand there's anti-Americanism here, and they say, yes, that's right. They usually say, try to tone it down a little bit. It was not hostile in terms of the comment. It was just, that's right. And they gave various explanations for it. The administration's policy...
That's interesting, because in Iran... I'm told that the feelings toward our country are actually, for the most part, very cordial.
That is an interesting contrast. I think that would be my guess. You wouldn't get the same response. Mm-hmm. This administration's policies toward Pakistan have been highly damaging to our long-term national security. Although Pakistan's domestic politics remain fragile, we must seize this occasion by working with those who promote democracy, human rights development, and the rule of law. We must align ourselves with the moderate forces critical to the fight against extremism and commit to supporting economic reform, legal political party development, and initiatives to integrate the Fatah into the rest of Pakistan. This will not be easy, but it is long overdue and will help ensure that we are using all the tools at our disposal to fight al-Qaeda and associated terrorist threats. Combating extremism and denying terrorists a safe haven now found in the Fatah requires, among other things, creating sustainable development strategies that provide both opportunities for the Pakistani people and, again, tangible examples of American goodwill as I saw in a Pakistani Kashmir. This must include not only traditional development projects, but institution building and political engagement in a region long deprived of such opportunities. While we target terrorists and extremists in the Fatah, we must also make sure that the people of the Fatah have economic options that can help them resist terrorism and extremism while reducing anti-American sentiment. Supporting the Pakistani people as they seek to strengthen development initiatives and democratic institutions is not just an outgrowth of our values, it is in our national security interest. This is not to say that this process will be free from challenges. There are already serious hurdles that must be dealt with, including negotiations in the Fatah Northwest Frontier Province, both of which I think are cause for serious concern and skepticism. America's allies must know that there can be no negotiations with terrorists who've sworn to harm our country. Those who would plot against American troops in Afghanistan or Americans here at home must be pursued relentlessly. We must, however, recognize that the new leadership was elected democratically by the Pakistani people, and we must try to work with them to advance our mutual interests in fostering security and development in the region. And again, Mr. Chairman, I'm so pleased with your interest and the growing interest in the Senate that I think will be very valuable. Quite a few senators and also members of the House who really want to work on this Pakistan-America relationship over the long term. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Sometimes when senators testify to lead off the hearing, we don't ask questions. Would you be willing to take maybe a question or two?
Sure.
Senator Cocker, do you have a question you'd like to ask, a question or two you'd like to ask
Mr.
Senator Franklin, our colleague?
I will not have a question, but I want to thank Senator Feingold for his statement. I want to thank Senator Feingold for his statement before this subcommittee, and to tell you that I first visited Pakistan three months after Musharraf took over the country after the coup, and visited with him and felt that he had some great ideas for the country. And I'm glad to hear you now say that it's about time that they move on democratically to a system. And I'm very interested in your comments about that.
Senator, we can't ignore the fact that President Musharraf did side with us and provide help, but the level of resentment toward the United States among Pakistani leaders and the Pakistani people because we seem to put all our eggs in that basket is a significant part of the anti-American feelings that I've described.
Mm-hmm. Senator Biden, my colleague from Delaware, has said to me from time to time that what we've had in Pakistan is not a Pakistan policy. We've had a Musharraf policy, and he suggested what we need is a Pakistan policy. When you were over there, have you been there before?
I was there briefly with Senator McCain and Senator Clinton.
That was an interesting
in 2005. The story I like to tell is I'd get off the plane and all the women in the country would run up to Senator Clinton, all the military men would go up to Senator McCain, I'd hold the luggage. But actually, it was a fabulous trip. And we had a very long conversation with Musharraf, and the contrast between meeting with him now with his changed political situation and then was really striking.
Mm-hmm. When you look at what our policy and the things that we're doing as a country in Pakistan now, what makes sense and what doesn't?
In terms of our policy right now? Well, we have to engage these new political leaders. They are impressive people. They include at least two major political parties that have a very tenuous coalition. But these are strong people.
Is this a coalition sort of like the coalition governments they put in Israel, or would it be a coalition more like putting the Democrats and Republicans together here?
A little bit closer to the Democrats and Republicans being together, although not exactly, but these really are political parties that are not terribly similar. They've represented two very different views of the future of Pakistan, different philosophy, but what they do share is a desire to return Pakistan to a democratic system, and they're talented. And they're interested in our views. And I also want to add that among the upbeat things I felt in Pakistan was a better attitude about their future relationship with India, which has been a source of such difficulty. Now, no one is naive to think that that's easy, but that was almost an upbeat topic, and there seemed to be a willingness and an interest in that, which I think would be good for us and good for India. So to me, we need to engage these folks. On the other hand, we can't say that our relationships with them is more important than making sure that Fatah region is not used as either a safe haven for Al-Qaeda or a launching pad for attacks on our troops in Afghanistan. That is non-negotiable for us. And I tried to make that clear, that is the bottom line for us. They can't have complete internal peace and democracy in Pakistan at the expense of our national security. The two have to work hand in hand.
Speaking of security, did you get a feel for the kind of security that's provided for their nuclear weapons? I'm told they have anywhere from 50 to 100 warheads or more. And
I did not get a detailed feel for that. I actually had longer, more extensive conversations on that with Ambassador Crocker in the previous visit, who at the time was the ambassador to Pakistan. But I did get some briefings on it, and without getting any details, you know, there are concerns, but there are also some feelings that there are real efforts being made to secure that. But that is a matter of great importance.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Crocker.
Now I'll ask a question here. When I first went there at that time, I was very, very impressed with Musharraf, because he told us some things that literally had my jaws fall open. One was that he wanted to make Pakistan literate. And so he introduced us to a woman who was going to be the Minister of Education, and she was going to make it literate. Secondly, he introduced us to his financial person, and he said he was going to correct the mistakes that they had financially there. And I learned that the Secretary of Treasury, Rubin, at that time, told me that they hired this person to their firm in New York, and that Musharraf was taking him there to work there. The third was he introduced us to a minister of foreign affairs who also worked in the United States and had ideas about relationships. So those were three areas that he said he wanted to really improve. And so my question to you, did you have any sense as to these areas and those improvements?
Well, you know, in fairness to President Musharraf, he, as I understand it, he did pass significant legislation working with the government there to improve women's rights, which were a serious, serious issue in Pakistan, continue to be. It's something I pressed him on, but I actually had a chance to meet with some civil society leaders and a woman who was particularly known for her leadership in that area, and she told me that things were somewhat improved. In terms of the economy, President Musharraf spoke at length about how proud he is of the growth of the Pakistani economy under his leadership, and his greatest concern was that might be slipping under this new government. Now, of course, the new leaders of the new government didn't agree with that, but he cited some of the things that you alluded to, Senator Akaka, as being important results of his presidency. And I, of course, can't deny that economic development and future of Pakistan is a terribly important thing. But it isn't more important than having a democracy. And so the two must work hand in hand.
One last comment and maybe a question. In the elections that were held, what has it been, 6 months or so ago? 6 months or so ago. As I recall, the party that was tended to be supportive of President Musharraf, their turnout, their support was greatly diminished.
That's right.
The support of the other two major parties rose up dramatically. But there, as I recall, there were religious parties that were involved as well, and their support turned out to be rather small.
Well, one particularly interesting development was in the Northwest Province, where I want to be corrected if I get this wrong, but I believe it's right. A more traditional religious hardline party was defeated.
Yes, that's
by a more
right.
open-minded, at least in my view, party. And I had a chance to meet with some of their new officials, and this is out in one of the more conservative areas, right near the Fatah. And so that was an exciting development. Mm-hmm. That instead of a hardline, sort of narrower approach, that actually suggested maybe the people in that region were tired of that and that they wanted some hope and economic opportunity and a sense of being connected to the rest of Pakistan and the rest of the world. So that was I believe that was one of the encouraging results of the election. And they are affiliated, as I understand it, with the government now.
Well, there's an irony. It's not lost on me and probably not lost on many others. I watched a film a couple months or two ago with my older boys and with my wife in Charlie Wilson's War. At a time when we were using our influence and our resources to help destabilize the undermine the Soviet position in Afghanistan and using folks that are pretty much in the northwestern part of Pakistan to help do that. So we've actually seen, it's kind of a mixing metaphors here, but we've seen this movie before. But well, we're sitting in a different seat when we watched it the last time.
And the part of the movie that the Pakistanis don't like is that after we did that, we just took off.
Yeah.
And that we didn't stay committed to that region. And so it's not only that we back Musharraf, it's this feeling that we're there when it sort of fits our purposes, but then we're not around, we don't have a consistent policy. And so, you know, I got one question in Pakistan from people saying, well, why are all these senators running around Pakistan meddling, United States senators meddling in our affairs? And I said, you know, I take a different view. I said, I think it's a big mistake for us not to have this kind of exchange. We certainly shouldn't go over our bounds. But the biggest mistake we could make is to not be knowledgeable and engaged with the Pakistanis. So I thought it was great that there were, Jesus, many as 10 members of Congress over there during the May break. I hope it's a sign in the long run to the Pakistanis that we aren't going to sort of be fair-weather people in terms of being interested in our relationship, but that it'll be maintained. And that's up to all of us to keep going there and talking about and doing exactly what you're doing today, Mr. Chairman, which I think is really positive.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Mr. Chairman, no,
yeah.
One more.
Senator Cochran.
There's one final question here. When we're interested in the military, because he was General Musharraf.
Yeah.
And at that time, he had military people all over the buildings. And so our question to him was, will this be a military government? And his answer was, as soon as he could, he would relieve the place of any military security. And I just wondered whether that has happened.
Well, he didn't move very quickly on demilitarizing the tone of his regime. In fact, I specifically asked him, as many others did, if he would please not be both president and head of the army at the same time, which he maintained for a very long time until recently, which was an inappropriate combination. So there was an inappropriate connection there that was bad for Pakistani democracy. Now that the new government is in place, the military leaders of the country are making a concerted effort to show that they are not trying to meddle in political affairs. In fact, some of them would not meet with some of the senators, including me, because they didn't think that was appropriate. They did meet, as I understand it, with some of our armed services people because of the specific, but the message I think they're trying to send is the civilian leaders will be your contact rather than military leaders in most cases, which I think is, depending on whether that's really what they're trying to do, is probably a good sign of a different approach rather than such a heavily military-laden look to the Pakistani government.
Well, we don't have time to ask you, sir. I wish we could get into sort of whether or not the Pakistani leaders with whom you met or spoke to, if they had felt any kind of sensitivity or understanding with respect to our concern about the safety of our troops. And the fact that they're not doing what they need to do in the northwestern region, it puts our people more at risk.
I met with the governor of the Northwest Frontier Province, a very eloquent man, and he gave a very long and very precise explanation of what these agreements were, how they're trying to put language in the agreements to make sure that it was understood that there should be no border crossings into Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. And he was very precise. But after he finished, I said to him, look, there's two things you have to understand about the American people. There's two things we can't tolerate. One is Osama bin Laden is in your area, not just in Pakistan. He's right here. That's what most people believe, and the others. Secondly, this is used as a launching pad to kill American troops. Those two things, in your very ear.
We're trying to protect a democratically elected government in Afghanistan.
Just said, those two things are not acceptable to any people in the world, and the American people can't accept. So we do want you to be able to achieve peace within your region, but not if that's the price that we as Americans have to pay. So that's a message I try to convey not only in Islamabad, but directly in the region where we're pretty sure these folks are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is a great opportunity, and I appreciate it.
We appreciate your very much your being our leadoff hitter, a good one, too.